This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 430.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everyone? It's Brendan Turner, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with a special show. That's right, with David Green here in the C-Shed. What's up, David?
What's going on, Brendan? It is awesome to be doing a show in the C-Shed. That's the becoming C-Shed. A bit of a tongue twister
C-Shed,
there.
C-Shed.
Yeah, this is a cool way to close up 2020.
Yeah, and speaking of 2020, this show is actually about 2020. It's about the end of 2020. And so what David and I are going to be doing today is breaking down some of the best pieces of advice we've gotten all year from some guests. We're going to be playing little clips and then talking about them. It should be a lot of fun. But before we get to that, let's get to today's
quick tip.
Today's quick tip. It's the end of the year, which means that a new year is beginning. And if you're watching this in the future, ignore that. But regardless of when you're watching this, if you have not sat down and specced out what you want your year to look like, what's the outcome of the end of the year, what amazing things you want to get accomplished this year, don't just say, oh, I know I should do it. Do it. Like, take the time to do it. Maybe today, maybe tomorrow. And if you can, go out for a weekend. Take your spouse out. Do it together with your spouse. It'll be game-changing. Get you guys all lined up together. And you will never regret those moments. Anything you want to add on that?
I have never regretted any time I did something intentionally. The best friends I picked, I intentionally chose them. The best businesses I started, I intentionally chose it. Everything that I didn't like about my life, I fell into because it was easy. So it's safe to reason that if you plan out your year and you intentionally pursue it, you're going to have a much better year.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, definitely makes a lot of sense.
We know, and you all know, why it's super important that good tenant screening is absolutely critical to your management process. Luckily, Rent Ready, the comprehensive property management software, has a new feature that makes tenant screening a breeze. In addition to TransUnion certified tenant screening, Rent Ready now offers proof of income verification. Rent Ready's automatic tenant proof of income verification ensures an in-depth check of each applicant's financial stability. With Plaid certified tenant income and assets reports, you can see a potential tenant's income summary and total earnings by month. All tenant screening and verification is paid by the tenant and done through the desktop and mobile app. It's time to say goodbye to gut check tenant screening and feel confident renting out your property with Rent Ready. And as a matter of fact, all Bigger Pockets pros have Rent Ready included in your pro membership. If you're not a pro, Rent Ready is offering you 50% off of their annual plan. New customers visit rentready.com and use code BP2024. That's RENTREDI.com using code BP2024. That's BP, like Bigger Pockets, in the year 2024 to save 50% off of 1 year of Rent Ready. Spring is here, and you know what that means. Fresh flowers, fresh air, fresh starts. So why not take a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security? SimpliSafe protects my home during the busy spring season when I'm out leveling up my portfolio. But you know why I really love SimpliSafe? Because it's very easy to install. As a matter of fact, I set up my entire system, my personal home, which is a 4-bedroom, 3-bath, in less than 30 minutes. They've got a super simple app, as whenever we're on vacation, we have friends come by the house to water the plants, check on the house, whatever it is. We're able to turn off our alarm right before our friends get to the house and turn it on right after they leave instantly. SimpliSafe offers a wide variety of high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods. They've got indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch day and night, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day. And I challenge you to figure out what you can buy for less than $1 a day. And with the 60-day money-back guarantee, you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. SimpliSafe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and we want you to have it too. So go get 20% off of your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplisafe.com/pockets. That's simplisafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today.
So let's get on with today's show. Again, today we're talking about a recap of 2020, some of the best moments, some of the best clips. So we're going to just start here right at the beginning. It's a very good place to start. So Palak Shah, we had on the show back on, what is it, show 368 of the podcast. Former corporate executive, made good income, wasn't satisfied with the lack of freedom. If you remember that episode, we talked a little bit about risk-taking muscle in that show. But here's the clip we're going to play. Cue the tape.
Yeah, one of the big things as a 9-to-5er is you get so used to this cushy lifestyle where there's like a paycheck coming in. You know, you go to work at a certain time, you come back at a certain time, and then you get a certain amount of money every month. And there's very little unpredictability, although you could get laid off any minute. But, you know, you just get used to this lifestyle. And it's really hard to become a risk taker. Being that way for years and years, it kind of conditions you to just be used to like these little vacations. Like I get 2 weeks at this time and I get 1 week at this time. And it's really hard to do that. But what I learned is, you know, risk is like taking risks. I always assumed actually that people are born with these abilities, but that's a skill that can be developed. And I probably read it somewhere. I don't know, but I call it like flexing my risk-taking muscle. And in the beginning, I had to learn to be comfortable taking risks and assigning numbers to it so that I got more and more comfortable. And then, you know, it's in the last few years, I have understood that it's something, it's a skill set, you can develop it. So just building a framework around it helped.
That's really good. Do you have any advice for the listeners of some things that you did that helped you build that risk-taking muscle? Because I really do think that, and Brandon, you might agree, probably the majority of people who want to get started in this and don't, it's because of just that fear that encompasses the risk that's involved.
Yeah,
that's a really good question. What I would do is I would make a spreadsheet and do like the first column as put all of the risks involved in a deal. And in the beginning, so we do bar deals. That's what I work on. And the beginning, for example, thinking about my very first bar deal, there are like so many risks that come to mind. And as a new investor, what one does is you just club all of these together and put them in a big risk pot. Mm. And then it just seems like a really like a massive daunting task, but they can be broken down. So I would make a spreadsheet and build first column as all of the risks. And for example, for in a bar deal, I would say maybe it's what if I go over my construction numbers, or what if the property doesn't appraise for what I wanted to appraise for at the end? What if I don't get the rent that I want? And so list all of them and then assign a dollar value to it that would be like the worst case scenario. So for me, for example, in construction, to mitigate that risk, we started putting 15% extra towards contingency. So we say, okay, this is a risk. We can go over construction. So let's start putting 15%, and that mitigates that one risk. So moving on to the next one, right? Then you say, okay, what if it doesn't appraise for where I wanted it to appraise? And having been in corporate and being a dabbler investor before, I know that a lot of people put 25% down and buy properties. So if I'm left with 5% in the deal, it's still better than putting 25% down and buying a property. If I don't get the rent that I want, okay, do I still want to invest in this property knowing that the worst case scenario rent is $100 less than what I'm expecting it to be, and assign dollar values to them and then decide if it's still worth pursuing it? And then the worst case scenario, I always think, if the worst case scenario happens, am I willing to spend that money to learn what I'm going to learn from this deal?
Yeah. Okay. So the idea of it's really easy to accept the life that we're given, right? It's really easy to say, hey, this is where I've been. This is what I have. And the majority of the world does that. They don't think, how do I expand out that? My question for you, David, is why do you think that is? And what's the first step in getting outside that?
I think that risk inherently sounds negative. First off, we're conditioned to look at, when you say risk, what you're talking about is what you can lose. Mm-hmm. So it feels expensive. There's a price to pay to take risk. And I think what Palak here is pointing out is that certainty is sometimes more expensive than risk. That you being locked in that job and having comfort, making your $80K a year with your 2 weeks of paid vacation and no risk actually comes like with, in some cases, a prison. That makes sense. So it's expensive to go for certainty. Your ceiling comes down pretty low. It's not like you have limitless ability to move forward. You have to be at a certain location at a time. There's maybe things you want to do and that company isn't offering you that opportunity. So the first step I would say is understand that while risk is going to cost you something, certainty almost always costs more. If you look at the highest paying jobs, they're commission based. Why is that? Because there's risk with it. If you don't work, money's not just coming your way. It's easy to fall into that. I'm a house cat. Someone's bringing me my tuna. Okay. But a lion loves the hunt. If you want to feel like a lion all the time, you have to accept that there's going to be some risk. But I continually remind myself that certainty is actually more expensive than risk. So I don't just focus on the negative elements of risk.
You know, this is one of the reasons I really like house hacking as well, because house hacking is a low risk way to get into your first deal. It's building up that risk muscle, that muscle that it's a little scary. It is scary. It's not easy necessarily to go buy out your first property, buy that duplex, live in half of it. But you can do it. Partnerships are another way. They're a fairly low risk way to do it. If you're like, even if you got 1% of somebody's deal, but you got to help out with every single aspect, it's a very low risk way to get that muscle going up. So people are struggling with that right now. Think about that. What is the smallest, like lowest risk way you can still take some risk?
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, you got to get comfortable with it's like surfing, right? You don't need to go out there on a 40-foot wave when you're learning, but you do need to get into the water and get wet and feel what surfing feels like. So we start with smaller waves, but once you've got that down, now you naturally want to progress.
Yeah, that's totally true. All right, moving on to the next clip of the day.
In my opinion, the most important thing we can do right now, aside from like be a community, stick together and quarantine so we can beat this, as an investor and a businessman, one of the most important things we can do is like still continue to pay our vendors on time and also pay our investors on time. Because like, I don't want to come out of this known as the guy that called his hard money lenders and asked for 12 months forgiveness. Like, I don't want that reputation. I want to be the guy that was like, oh, damn, when everything shut down, we did work for Justin and he still paid us. You know, I just put a new roof on a house last week on the spot, $15,000 check. I mean, obviously, I don't want to write that right now. But at the same time, I respect my roofers and I still want to do business with them.
Yeah. So I love that advice about reputation mattering so much more than even profit during this time. Now, here we are almost a year into this COVID mess and we're still not all the way through it yet, right? We don't know what 2021 is going to hold. But I think that principle still applies, is that the integrity that you handle problems, it's like the fire, you know, like you're refined by the fire. The integrity at which you handle it is going to help you the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years of your business. And I think that this year, I said this on the Bigger Pockets Business Podcast that just came out, or I think it's either coming out now or just came out. But it's like, this is a refining year for real estate investors and for business owners. It refined who had the right systems, who had the right processes in place, who had the right integrity. And those people who didn't are going to struggle.
One of my favorite quotes is that when the tide goes out, you find out who's been swimming naked.
Yeah.
And the last 10 years or so, we've just seen the economy increases. You can make bad decisions and you're okay because the tide just keeps going up. And when something like this happens and it shakes, the tide will go down. Yeah. And where I'm getting at with that is your reputation doesn't seem like it matters as much when the environment is so conducive. The wind's always at your back.
Are you saying like when people are all panicking and crazy, like it doesn't matter about your...
No, that's when it does matter. Okay, we've gotten away from that because it was so easy that your reputation didn't matter. And then once you see that little bump in the road, it exposes if you're running a good business, if you're a man of your word or a woman of your word, if you have sound principles. So don't get lulled into that false sense of security of a rising tide being all that matters, because at some point it is going to change, and how your reputation and how you manage your business will become very important.
Yeah. What do you think about his advice about, you know, not trying to catch a falling knife? How do we balance that with at the same time saying we want to keep, you know, growing our portfolios, even in bad times, good times, we want to do whatever. Like, how do you balance that and how have you balanced that? And how do you continue? Because we don't know if the knife is completely fallen yet, right? It may not fall more. But if you always took the viewpoint of, well, there's risk, so I'm not going to do it.
You'd never do anything.
So how do you balance that?
I think that that analogy of you never want to catch a falling knife typically comes from a stock market perspective where prices are dropping and the only way you make money is buying low and selling high. Mm-hmm. So when I think the knife could be falling, I don't look at it like, well, I want to wait till the knife goes all the way down, because we don't bet on appreciation to make money in real estate. You shift your strategy and you start buying properties where even if the value kept coming down, the profitability or the cash flow of the property would be good, or over a 10, 15, 20 year window. Like, I caught a falling knife when I bought my first house in 2009. I bought it for 195. It had originally sold at 565. It dropped down to about 180. I could have paid 180 a couple months later. I didn't hit the bottom. Does it matter to me now that it's worth $475,000 again? So, but taking that big picture approach is a really big way. And then I just don't like investing in any asset where there's only one way that I win. It's why I don't get into Forex trading, and I don't make these like quick and easy, fast deals where I just got to buy low, sell high. That's my only option. What we like to do when we're investing is several layers of strategy that will be profitable for that deal.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on Bitcoin right now?
I think that people are going to like Bitcoin because I think that we're, in a sense, kind of ruining our currency by just printing more and more and more of it. That's one of the reasons that COVID didn't shut down the economy like a lot of people expected. They just didn't factor in the fact that the government could just keep pumping stimulus in. Like, it probably should have went down and it didn't. So I think that, I don't know about Bitcoin itself, and I don't want to claim to be an expert in cryptocurrency, but I think things like cryptocurrency, maybe like baseball cards, other things that you might not have considered will gain value as we debase our own currency.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. I might just like take 10 or 15 grand, which, you know, to put it in perspective, like I have a lot of money. Like, I'm not like, you know, a Bill Gates here, but like it's not like life-changing money. So I'm not telling people. What I'm trying to say,
it's not really a risk for you.
Yeah, I'm not saying go out and take your life savings and go buy Bitcoin, but I might take a small piece of my portfolio, a small piece of my disposable income, and put that into like Bitcoin, and I might put into a few other things as well. As a, I don't know, like gold, for example, mm-hmm. as potentially as a,
as
it
a
may
hedge.
Go to zero. What?
As a hedge, as,
maybe as a hedge, but almost also more of as a long gamble.
Okay,
like if Bitcoin goes to, you know, 10, you know, 1,000x of what it's worth today, I'll be like, well, I'm sure I'm glad I did that. I made my $1 million or whatever. But in reality, I don't think it's going to, and I may lose all of it. But if I do that across 2, 3, 4 different, like, you know, somewhat crazy speculative investments, and it's only a very small portion of my portfolio, right, I think that might be a fun way to, I'm a diversify within your like basket kind of guy. Like, you know, like, I'm not like getting, you know, put 10% of your money in stocks, 10 in real estate, 10 in cars, 10 in gold. I'm not that guy. I'm all real estate. But if I want to do 1% of my income in something else for the fact that it may shoot up, I may do it. What I don't like is that Bitcoin is at the very highest it's ever been right now. Again, and again, this show is coming out a few weeks after we're recording this, or a week after, I think. So maybe it dropped again, but it's doing crazy good. That always makes me scared. It's the whole taxi cab philosophy, right? Is when your taxi cab driver says to invest in something, that's when you should get out of it.
Well, it's so confusing because on one hand you hear don't buy, catch a falling knife, and on the other hand you hear don't buy something when it's at its peak.
Yeah.
The knife's really high.
Yeah, so what do you do? You invest for sound principles.
There you go. Or you'll drive yourself crazy trying to predict things you can't.
You'll drive yourself completely nuts. All right, let's move on to the next clip of this show. And this, by the way, is Justin Stamper, who's a good buddy of ours here on the show. He's the guy from Zombie House Flipping, if you've seen that. He was on episode 375. That's where this clip comes from. All right, so for our next clip, we actually asked in episode 376, we went and talked to 12 real estate just rock stars, people who are really good with finance and real estate, asked them their advice on what they should be doing during a recession or during hard, difficult times. And we're going to pull out one little clip here from our friend David Osborne. David Osborne is a guy we've had on the show a couple times, New York Times bestselling author of Wealth Can't Wait. He co-wrote Bidding to Buy that we came out with here at Bigger Pockets recently. And here's what David Osborne said that I think is just so good.
Write yourself a 10-year vision. Right at the top of the page, it's 2030. My last 10 years have been amazing. My wife and I are getting on better than ever. My health and fitness is incredible. My kids are all doing amazing. My daughter's in college, whatever. Then get into business. You say 10 years ago today, we had this crisis, this coronavirus. The entire economy came to a halt. And I'm so proud of the way I led and the character I developed and the man I became through that time period. I made great decisions. I cut overhead quickly. I preserved cash. And then I took full advantage of the recovery. And because it was such a deep, sharp crash, the recovery was long and lasting, and there was a lot of money to be made. And that's what really made my fortune and helped me get to a whole new level. And you remember, the worst thing about a boom is that every day you're in a boom, you're one day closer to a crash. Every day you're in a crash, you're one day closer to a boom. And the great thing about right now is we're in a crash. So we're going to ride this thing out, and then we're going to ride a big boom into the future. We'll be twice the people, twice the business people we are, twice the men we are or women, stronger fathers, stronger husbands or wives, whatever. And we're going to do all that. And the reason it's valuable to write about your future from today is it puts perspective on it. In 10 years, you won't remember the pain and fear that we're living through today. You'll just remember the abundance that came from it. So good luck. Write your 10-year vision.
Yeah. So David is basically saying here, of course, like, keep an eye on the long-term perspective. I mean, it's really easy to get caught up in like, what am I doing right now? What's happening right now? And honestly, as we go into 2021, we don't know what's going to happen. In 2020, nobody could predict what happened here. But when you have a long-term 10, even 15, 20-year outlook on your life, you realize like, this will be a blip, but it's not going to be like a life-changing necessarily blip for most of us. It'll be a life-altering blip, but not like life, not life-ending, right?
It's kind of like what I said, where when I bought that house at 195 and it dropped to 180, I was kicking. Imagine the emotions I was feeling. You're an idiot. Why are you doing this? You should have waited. You bought too soon. You don't know what you're doing. And then that moment over that couple of months, that's how I felt. And I was thinking I should never buy real estate. Same thing happened on that very first deal where my tenant took advantage of me. We documented that in the Bigger Pockets podcast. I think 169, I went over that. I thought I sucked at being a landlord. I did suck at being a landlord. It felt like a terrible decision. Looking back, I have a house I bought at 195. It is now worth about 475 and it's cash flowing over $1,000 a month. That was not a bad decision. Yeah. Almost everything that I look at from a overall perspective, a longer term, it feels so much different than it did when I was in the moment. Think about a house, the first house you bought, what the escrow process was like.
Yeah.
Do you ever even think about it once now?
No,
but in that moment, it's so big. So what I say is zoom out. What I love about Dave's advice is he's talking about creating a vision that you can set your sights on and focus on that. And it creates the emotions. Yep. Like you just said, I became a much better person. I have a great relationship with my wife. I'm in really good health. So he has a setback about his health. He gets injured. He can't run. Maybe he gains a little bit of weight. In the moment, it's easy to feel bad. Yep. But when you're constantly looking at the big picture and you're like, hey, I can bounce back from this. That was a 3-month period out of a 10-year chunk of time. That meant nothing. You stay in a healthier emotional state that keeps you excited and optimistic about moving forward.
Yeah, that's totally true. Yeah, I love that idea. I mean, you know me, like we talk about the vivid vision all the time. There's a book by Cameron Harold, who I think is coming on the show in a few weeks, which is pretty cool. But yeah, we talk a lot about this vivid vision about like, where do you want your life to be? Like if you're an artist and you have a paintbrush, what do you want to paint? Go and paint it. And that's exactly what David Osborne is saying here. So I think it's helped clarify for me a lot of things this year, having that vision. You know, because I had this clear vision, like I think I was able to navigate 2020 better. And so my advice for everyone listening right now is if you don't have that, create that vision. Do exactly what David just said.
You sold me on it. I never was a proponent of that. I was much more tactical. Yeah. Now I'm seeing, after that's I'm seeing funny. The changes in your own life, that this is something I absolutely have to do. And while I'm in Hawaii, I'm working on that.
That's awesome, man. It's awesome. All right, moving on to the next clip today. And that was David Osborne. Next one is Thatch Nguyen. So Thatch was on episode number 395 of the Bigger Pockets podcast. You guys remember Thatch. He was a hilarious, amazing dude from the Seattle market who, I think he was up to $100,000 a month in passive income. The guy is just a beast when it comes to real estate. Awesome energy. Still door knocks, even though he's a multimillionaire. You probably remember that little thing. No excuse attitude. And he talks about a lot about paid off houses. He was one that normally we talk a lot about leverage, but he pays off a lot of houses and the peace of mind you get from that. So with that said, let's pull up the clip from Thatch.
I accumulated the number of doors I needed. So I know that if I had those many doors, I would get in like 25 grand. Once I accumulated the number of doors, and then I call it phase two, which is I started to pay them off.
Okay.
Phase one, I accumulated. Phase two, then I pay it off. And once I got that out of the way, now I am out of the rat race. Now I can go ahead and increase whatever I want, but I'm doing it because I want to do it, not because I have to do it.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, there's a lot of debate on whether or not you should pay off properties. Let's have that debate real quick here, or at least a discussion. Let's say you could pay off a mortgage at 4% interest, and then it's basically like you're making 4% of your money, which people say is stupid from a financial standpoint. But then the beauty of having them paid off is that nobody can come take it from you. Dave Ramsey all day long would fight for pay them off as quickly as possible or just buy them for cash.
That's right.
So how do you look at the debate and where do you find yourself in there?
Yes. So for me is I gone through the cycle now. This is this craziness going on right now. This probably not maybe the fourth or fifth time I've gone through some crazy stuff.
And by craziness, you're talking about the coronavirus and the threat to the economy?
Yeah, the coronavirus, you know, I gone through the 2008 crash. But the bottom line is you got to have peace of mind at some point on this journey. Mm. If you always buy to keep buying and leverage to keep leveraging, borrow to keep borrowing, right? And you don't have ever have paid off, you don't really have the true peace of mind. I mean, why are we doing all this for, right? Not to create more stress for ourselves. I will get older. I'm 50 years old. As you get older, you want peace of mind. And so in my opinion, what I learned from my mentor is figure out how much money do you need to live comfortably if everything was free and clear. And at that time, I say, if I had $25,000, if it's free and clear, so I'd be very comfortable. He said, well, let's make that the first benchmark. Let's figure out how many doors you need to have. And let's get those paid off out of the way so that you can have peace of mind. Then after that, if you want, you can grow how much more passive income you want, but your house is free and clear. You know what I mean? You don't have to worry about selling right now. There's a lot of real estate in Seattle right now that are scared to shit right now, or even just in anywhere through America. But in Seattle, since we are the hot city right now with this virus, can nobody sell no real estate? Well, imagine this go for 2-3 months. They're all going to go, you know what I mean, broke, let alone what they're going to do. So I think at some point, the peace of mind is worth a lot of money. So what I learned from my mentor is figure out how much money I need to have to be out of the rat race and then get that out of the way, get my house paid. I live in a big house in Mercer Island. This house is like over $3 million, free and clear, right? And I get everything out of the way. And after that, I go and invest and grow my net worth and grow my passive income because I want to, and it's fun now. It's not because I have to.
All right. So that advice from Thatch, his idea of peace of mind, I something like that like just resonates in my soul so much, you know, like just having that like peace that no matter what happens, I'm okay. And I think this year was a good reminder of why leverage is not always the best advice. Like sometimes it's okay to pay off some properties. And I've been working at that this year as well. And I hope to continue to, because there's something nice about like, what are you building for? If you're looking for that peace of mind, why not relax a little bit and do that? What do you think on that?
I think that's why you need to have your vivid vision.
Yeah.
Because from my perspective, having paid off properties, it causes me anxiety. I've got about 8 right now, and I'm constantly trying to figure out what do I need to do to get those refinanced and where would I put the money? Mm-hmm. I don't have peace of mind because I've got this equity sitting out there that's not working for me. But my vision for what I want is much different than Thatch's, where he was basically saying, look, I want to take risk, but I don't feel comfortable doing that while I have a family and they need to be taken care of. So I'm going to earn the right to take risk by creating enough security on this side. I think that's brilliant. Yeah. He said, you pay everything out, then you can do whatever you want. Then he goes and rolls the dice and he has a blast and he builds an empire. He probably wouldn't have if he was constantly worrying, will my family not eat if I fail rolling the dice? So having the vision will make it very clear whether you should leverage, whether you shouldn't, how to go about doing it, what type of property to buy. And what we really see from people is saying, well, what are they doing? So I should go do it like for myself. But if their vision's different than yours or different than mine, then it doesn't make sense to follow what one of us is doing or what Thatch is doing himself.
Yeah, that's 100%. Yeah, I think knowing yourself, knowing what you want, and not just taking blind advice from some random person on the internet because they said to do this, you think about what do you actually want? Now, there's a really good book out there called Lifeonaire, Lifeonaire. It's like Millionaire with Life. I've mentioned it before on the show, but I really like it a lot because it's all about that. It's like designing a business and investment like world, like, you know, whether it's a business or you're a real estate investor, around your life rather than the other way around. So you're not saying, I'm going to do all this real estate stuff and then I'm going to fit my life in where it fits around that. You're saying, what do I want my life to look like? And then I'm going to build a business that supports that. And for many people, the idea of just having more freed off properties is such a powerful thing. I mean, this again, if paid off properties, again, give you that security you want. For some people, that's the opposite of security. They want to get that money working. They want to build a faster, they want to grow faster. I mean, the more debt you use, the faster you grow, but it's the more risk you are. So the more risk you have. So there's definitely a balance there. So again, that whole interview with Thatch was just like fire. Like he was just like spitting so much good stuff on that show. So
if you ever run out of motivation, that's when to go listen to.
Yes,
him. He'll get 100%. You fired up again.
Yeah, 100%.
Finding rental property insurance has been a headache for the past few years. You know the feeling. You're scrambling, calling 20 different insurance agencies in a dozen different cities, struggling to protect your portfolio at the right cost. But I'm going to tell you a little secret that'll change everything. Veteran investors don't go through the everyday insurance companies. They just use NREG. NREG, that's NREIG, provides insurance solely for real estate investors. They've built the largest insurance program in the country for residential tenant-occupied, vacant, and renovation properties. The best part? You can put all your properties on one insurance schedule and one monthly bill. And you can add, change, or remove properties without having to cancel one policy and purchase another. They insure properties from single-family rentals up to 20-unit multifamily dwellings, vacation rentals, mobile homes, condos, and more. Trade catchy jingles for cash flow with insurance made for investors. Visit nreig.com/bppod to request a proposal. nreig.com/bppod. You might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from ConnectInvest. ConnectInvest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. connectinvest.com/VP. As home prices and interest rates continue to rise and inventory levels dip, it's getting harder to find quality flips and wholesale deals. When there's not enough on-market inventory to go around, it's time to start looking off-market. Lucky for you, there are millions of homeowners nationwide who own a property they need to get off their hands. I got two words for you, my friend. PropStream it. PropStream is the leading real estate data provider and recognized as a Tech 100 honoree by Housing Wire for the fourth consecutive year. With PropStream, you can search over 155 million properties nationwide using 120-plus search filters like pre-foreclosure, bankruptcy, pre-probate, failed listings, and more to help you find motivated sellers in seconds. PropStream offers both public record data and an MLS sales estimate that's over 99% accurate to help you get the most accurate comps even in non-disclosure states. PropStream also provides lead automation, skip tracing, and a marketing suite with emails, postcards, and custom landing pages to close more deals efficiently. Get started today with their 7-day free trial and get 50 leads for free. Head on over to www.propstream.com/BP. That's www.propstream.com/BP.
All right, so moving on to the next clip. The next clip we've got, our buddy Tarl Yarber. Actually, I think was here earlier. Tarl actually was on show number 398 of the Bigger Pockets podcast. He's flipped hundreds of houses, but then he had not owned any single rental properties. He had a big business, tons of stress, wasn't too happy. So he changed his business around when he realized something. So we're going to, like, he actually learned from Thatch, the guy we just had on the show a second ago. He learned from him. And so he's going to share a little bit of that right now.
And even though we did more deals, more production in 2017 than we did in 2016, I made the same amount of money on both years. Personally, me. My company made more money, but we had more overhead, more stress, more hours into it. And at the end of the day, I personally had the same reward doing less work in 2016, if that makes sense. And so it was a wake-up call for me to go, like, something's broken here, and I don't like this, and why do we keep doing this? Because the thought of repeating another year, this sucks. Right. So luckily you guys just had Thatch Nguyen, right? Who was on your guys' podcast recently. He's a really good friend of ours. He had a little thing that he was doing, and I went to it and to go hang out with him. And it was like that perfect crystal moment. I could have probably heard somebody say this 100 other times, read in a book, and ignored it completely. Right. And I probably did, but he said it at that moment. He said, the key right now is most people build their business and then take their life and try to get their life to fit their business, whatever they have left over, right? Instead, why don't people do it the other way around, where they figure out what kind of life do they actually want to live and then design their business to fit that lifestyle? And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You could do that? So why aren't we doing that? It was like, aha. My wife and I need to sit down for a second and figure out, what do we even want our lives to look like? Because we never took the time to do that. And if I didn't have those failures at the end of 2017, and I actually got what we originally wanted on our business plan, I wouldn't have had time to even think about that stuff. we would have just been growing, right? And going, I would have still hated it more. So we, that was the aha moment. And at that point, my wife and I made my wife and I sit down for three Saturdays in a row with white butcher paper out. And we started mapping out, like, what do we want our actual life to look like on it? Just next year. Let's just start with 2018. What do we want 2018 to look like? Because I've had a struggle with thinking long-term for a really long time. Because I was like, I couldn't even think past 6 months or a month at times and stuff. And so we worked on 2018 and we said, what do we want to do most? What would make us most happy?
So the funny thing about this clip is that Tarl, who's a friend of ours, right after we recorded this episode with him, like an hour later, I called him and I was like, Tarl, you said on the interview we did with you, and it's not on this clip necessarily, but you said your favorite thing in the entire world is diving. Like, just, you love to dive. Why don't you come to Maui for the winter and come hang out and dive more often? And he goes, that's a really good idea. And like, he took the advice he just gave and he built his life around it. And now Tarl is here. He's a block from me, just like Josh Dorkin's a couple blocks from me. And now you're right here with me in this room.
Also because of advice you gave where you said, David, you have some decision fatigue. Why don't you come to Hawaii and get away from it all and get some perspective?
Got you out here. So it's interesting that Tarl came out here. And again, that it's similar to what we just talked about, this book Life in Air that I mentioned and building your life around it. Tarl's a great example of that. He leads his life by his lifestyle at this point. Like, what does he want his lifestyle to look like? And he builds his business around it. How are you doing that in your business, David?
Well, I really didn't put a lot of thought into that until this trip. So getting away from it was a really big help for me. What I'm doing now is this is not something I would totally do normally. I'm looking at having the whole team make vision boards.
Oh, nice. Right?
Writing out, these are the things that I like. Being here in Hawaii, looking at condos, maybe we'll do a show where I'm talking about like what the experience has been like coming out here to buy property, has helped me to realize I want a couple of these, and then I want to get a property more like yours. So that's where I want to go. What would I need to do so that my California businesses are still operating profitably and successfully if I'm out here more often? Now my mind's constantly looking at, what do I need? What do I have to change? What do I have to do differently? Who do I need to let fail a couple times to let them grow? All this stuff that I was probably before this thinking more along the lines of, I don't want to go through that. That sounds too painful. Well, now that pain doesn't seem so bad if it means that I get to be in Hawaii more often. So, I mean, you're a man of influence.
Man of influence. I don't know what that means, but yeah. Good stuff. Like, it's good. How do you think this stuff applies to people who are just getting started? There's a tendency of people who are super successful. Tarl, you know, Thatch, you or I, that we've got a lot of real estate, a lot of cash flow coming in. How do you do this when you're just getting started?
Well, I think a lot of people already have it. That's why they're listening to you and I on the podcast. They know that they want something different than where they are, but they don't know what that needs to look like. When I first joined GoBundance, this came up a lot. Dave Osborne was constantly saying, well, what kind of life do you want? What are your goals? Everything was about goal achieving. I'm like, I don't know what goals I have. I just taken the most of what I got and trying to work with that. I didn't have a plan of where I wanted to go. So I was very confused. It took me several years to get to even this point. It's okay to take time worrying about that and thinking about it. It's a complicated process. You got to figure out, what do you enjoy doing? What feels light to you? What's your superpower? What are the things that are currently draining you? It is a process to identify those types of things and label them out. So I think that the 90-day intention journal is a really great place to get started, because you're going to write out your thoughts and what you want your life to look like. I think journaling and saying what you liked about your day is really helpful, because you can start to analyze, well, this was awesome, this wasn't, I need more of that. And let it happen like naturally. It's going to be, you have to be purposeful about it, but give it some time to play out. And then once you identify, this is something I don't want, be really intentional about getting it out of your life, replacing it with something else. And I think it is a journey. It is not a one stop, hey, I made a decision and it's all better. Let that go. That's hurting a lot of people. That's holding you back. If you think, well, what's the one move I got to make to get that property under contract or to change my life? It's a series of steps and it's a muscle that you have to build. But I would say for the new people, like when I was new, I didn't even know what I wanted my life to look like. Yeah. I just knew I didn't want to have to go back to being a cop. I didn't know what I wanted to do instead. It was a scarcity mindset. And that's changed from spending more time with you.
Oh, that's cool, man. I will add this one thing. It's easy when people listen to stuff like what Tarl just said, be like, well, I want to dive every day and hang out in Hawaii. And there's the phrase that we've been using a lot lately. And have you earned the right to be able to do diving every day, right? Have you earned the right to be able to go move to Hawaii? And for many people, you have already. And if you have, you need to start thinking that way. If you have not, it doesn't mean you can't start thinking that way of like, what do you want? You just may not have that yet. Like right now, Tarl was able to go, you know, diving in Hawaii sounds for the winter sounds fun. So Tarl came out here. It's awesome. And we hang out like almost every day now. But he had built up a business over the last 5 or 10 years to be able to do that. So you might be listening to this in a different spot. Still have the vision. Start thinking, what do you want? What looks great? And then build your business. Start working toward that point. So again, I don't want people to miss the point here, just thinking, oh, you got, like, once you get rich, you can do whatever you want. No, you should plan, start working toward that right now. Start with the end in mind. All right. With that said, let's move on to the next clip. Oh, and this clip is with actually my performance coach, Mr. Jason Dries, from episode 403 of the podcast, one very popular episode of our show, one of our first weekend mindset shows. And he really pinpoints like the number one mistake that people make when they're set out to accomplish something. It's like a really simple shift that can totally change everything. Let's listen now.
There's two decision-making models, right? And these actually stem back from the Tony Robbins days. But the first decision-making model is, okay, I'm going to get a property. So let's decide, plan, commit. I'm going to decide on the target. I'm going to create a plan, and then I'm going to commit to the target. And they're getting stuck in the planning section because they're aiming for perfection, right? So they're going decide, plan, commit. So they're never actually committing to the end target. They're trying to plan their way to a commitment. The other alternative is decide. Yeah, going to get one prop, my first door, first duplex. Commit. It's going to happen. Absolutely. Do I know how? I don't know. So decide, commit, figure out how. That's where people need to go.
All right. So I love this point. I love this point that Jason makes today, is that so many people are, what I say, they're interested in real estate. They're interested in success, but they haven't actually fully committed to it because they don't know all the pieces yet. They haven't put it all together yet. So they haven't fully committed to it. And therefore they never take the steps needed to get to the point to committing to it. But like he says, like, the first step is deciding, like, are you going to do this or not? Yes or no. Are you pursuing financial independence through real estate investing? Yes, I'm doing it. Are you committed to it? Yes, I'm committed to it. I'm doing it. Like, no matter what, come hell or high water, I'm doing it. Now let's figure out how to do it there. And it's just a different way of thinking, because so many people just think, well, how do I do it first? I got to know the whole step. Have you found that true in your own life? Do you feel like you made that adjustment? Have you always been this way where you're just like, you know, decide, you like, have you been the opposite, or which model have you followed?
I got very lucky when I was young that I got into basketball at a very high level, and I was athletic more than the average person, but not compared to the really good basketball players I was competing with. And I realized that my athleticism improved, my game improved from hard work. My brain made this connection between, if I stick with something and put a lot of effort, magically the results I get will come up. And then I just started applying that to everything else in life. And I think everyone kind of needs that moment in their own life, what it is. Hey, I didn't get good grades, and then I learned how to study and I did get good grades, or whatever. Because once you catch that momentum and that feeling, it starts to become very easy to say, hey, I'm going to do this, and it's okay if I suck at it. I won't suck forever. I think if you've never had that experience, you think in your own head, either I'm good at it or I'm not. Oh, I'm not good at real estate investing. I don't know anything. I shouldn't do it. But life doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way for anything. It doesn't work that way for working out, learning a new skill, like snowboarding. There's no one that goes out there and crushes it snowboarding or surfing on their first time. There may be people that pick it up faster than others, but a lot of that is like, well, what other things in your life did you do and learn, and the synapses in your brain were sort of connected. So I think that's a big problem, is if you haven't had something to build on in your past, that this can feel daunting and you think you're doing it wrong. And another point that they made that I really liked is the idea of perfection getting in the way. That's huge. Yeah. And as a performance coach, I know Jason sees this all the time. I struggle with this. I'm looking at houses right now, a new place for me to go buy. I'm going to house hack in the Bay Area. They're very expensive houses. It's around $1.5 million. So it's a pretty big decision. And it's easy to get sucked into, well, what's the perfect house? What's the very best one? And if I finally find the very best house, then the next question is, well, what if I wait? Will a better one come out? And you never get out of that. What I now do, instead of thinking what's perfect, is I say, well, is it better than where I am right now? Yep. Then move forward. If I find a better house after this one, I'll buy it next year. That's such a healthier way to think. Instead of, am I in perfect shape to go work out? No, but would it be better if I worked out than if I didn't work out? And if we all sort of adjust our expectations with, is this better than where I am? Can I move the ball forward? As opposed to, can I get a touchdown on one play? Progress starts to become a lot easier.
I love that analogy of like moving balls down the field, right? Like if you're playing football, every play doesn't have to be a Hail Mary. Like just continually drive that forward. And I think that's a big piece of commitment, is like, I was like kind of 2019 or 2018, 2017 was like, you know, pretty satisfied with my real estate. I had a big portfolio, almost 100 units. And I'm like, well, what do I do next? And I'm not really sure. And I was doing the podcast. I wrote a book, and it was good, but I was trying to make a plan on what I was going to do next. before I was going into the like commitment phase or even decision phase. So it was like, I literally was like one day I was just like, you know what? I'm doing mobile home parks. Actually, I think I was with you that day. I think we were at a GoBundance thing. I was like, I'm doing mobile home parks. That's what I'm doing. And then it was like, I committed to it. I'm doing this no matter what. I was in. And commitment is oftentimes, it's something we say. We can be intentionally committed to something, but then commitment is reinforced by the actions that we then take repeatedly. Right. So if you're committed to losing weight and then the next day you're going to McDonald's for every meal, and then after that you're getting Pizza Hut for every meal, and like you're just continually eating fast food and junk food, are you like, you're not really committed. You're just desiring it, right? There's a huge difference between desire and commitment. So I was like, I decided I'm doing it. I'm committed to it. I started taking little actions, started moving the ball down the field. And as a result, that I figured out the plan along the way. It's like jumping out of an airplane and building your parachute on the way down. Like, I figured out the plan. I made a lot of mistakes the first few months and even in the first year. I did things I wouldn't do again, hired people I wouldn't hire again. But each of those things taught me a little lesson, and we learned what better ways to do things, what not. And so like, because of that now is why we, I think, have grown so much. So it's just a different model. It's the decide, commit, then plan model.
Every good football player knows that the big plays come out of what you learned on the smaller plays. You run the ball, you run the ball, you run the ball. You start to notice that they're bringing their safety up to try to stop that run. That opens you up for the big play. Real estate investing is the same way. I'm analyzing deals, I'm making progress, I'm getting base hits, and then boom, because I'm in the game, an awesome deal crosses my path that I never would have saw if I wasn't moving the ball forward. So just adjust your expectations. It's okay if you're not on your very first deal crushing it. It doesn't have to be perfect. In fact, if you're trying to be perfect, you're probably going to get passed up by everybody who's not.
Yeah, that's so true. All right, for our last clip of the day, we're going to bring in Amanda Young. So Amanda Young was on show number 422 just a little bit ago. Amazing show. A single mom who lost her job, had no other options than to make real estate work. So let's hear from Amanda right now.
So good. All my bills are paid through my rental income, my mortgage, groceries, gas. I do not live an extravagant lifestyle. My house is just a normal house. I drive an old beat up Toyota as a work truck. So you know, if you're not extravagant, then you can kind of get to a point where you don't have to have a W-2 income. And what happened for me was the W-2 income was really holding me back in a lot of ways. I did not have time to devote to real estate. Real estate was my passion, because between the time I bought my second rental and then started my flipping business, I did have to go out and get another W-2 job. And that really hindered my business in a lot of ways, but I had to do what I had to do. And the end of 2018, corporate America quit me. And my boss at the time sat me down and she says, and Kristen, I love you. Thank you so much. But she sets me down and she says, Amanda, this is not your passion. Your passion is real estate and you need to follow your passion. I have to let you go because I was in a sales position. I didn't meet my numbers. So she let me go, but she says, this is where you need to be. This is where you excel at. This is what you're passionate about. And one day I'm going to see you on TV. And she actually, she saw me on TV. I was on the Discovery Channel for doing what I do.
That's so cool. Yeah, I love that story, because if you listen to the whole episode, she was buying like houses with sinkholes, like problems. Remember that?
Yeah. And super cool niche.
Yeah, super cool niche. And she ended up being on a Discovery Channel for that thing. So, but I just, this is such a powerful statement from her, this idea of, if you keep your expenses low, like generally low, when you're trying to build financial freedom, it's so much easier to get that, to get out of the rat race. In fact, I do this webinar, you know, you do them a lot too, but we do these webinars every week for Bigger Pockets. And a lot of times I have a poll that I pop up. I say, how much money do you need to pay your bills? Like level one financial freedom. I like to say there's three levels, right? Level one is like, I can pay my bills. Level two is I can buy a jet. Level three is I can buy the New York Jets. So there's like the three levels, right? So level one, what do I need to be able to do that? Pay my bills. Some people say $3,000 a month. Some people say $2,000 a month. But then, like, I would say a good chunk of them say $15,000 a month, $20,000 a month, $25,000 a month, just to pay your bills. And I'm like, man, the job is so much harder for those people than it is for the person that needs $3,000 a month. So when I was 27, I hit $3,000 a month. I was able to quit my job. And because of that, I was able to go invest all my time into two things, Bigger Pockets and my real estate portfolio. And because I had that, I kept my expenses fairly low, and then I just creeped up from there. Rather than making expenses high with your job, and then always struggling and never being able to leave your job. So if there's like, there's a lot of advice I'd give people, but like if you're listening to this right now, is keep your expenses low if you're not yet at that financial freedom number, and then just scale with your cash flow rather than scale with your job income. And that's so hard to do.
I'm so glad you shared that story, though, because I would think, looking back, if we said, how did Brandon Turner become the legend? That was a big component of it, is you made yourself pivotable. You weren't weighed down. You could make adjustments. You could take risks. You learned faster than other people did. Amanda was one of my favorite interviews of the year. And her story reminds me of a scene in Batman. I'm a huge Batman fan. I love the Christopher Nolan movies. And there's a scene where they're all stuck in a prison. And let's say that prison would be not being financially free. And the worst part of this prison is you can actually see the way out. You just climb up a wall and you can get out of there. So it torments you because you're looking at this carrot that you want so bad, but you're reminded every day, I can't climb that wall. And I think that's how a lot of our listeners feel. And the problem with getting out of that prison is you had to climb a wall and make a jump from one rock to another. And they would all tie a rope around their waist. So if they missed the jump, the rope would catch them. That way they wouldn't die. It would hurt, but they wouldn't die. Yeah. And nobody could make the jump. And Batman, who was stuck in there, talked to an old man who told him about the one person that made the jump. And the secret was they didn't use the rope. The rope was actually weighing them down. What you thought was keeping you safe was preventing you from achieving your goal. So in order to escape, what he does is he takes that leap of faith. He gets rid of the rope. He makes the jump. He catches the rock and he climbs out of the prison. That W-2 job, that security for many people is their rope. Yeah. They're looking up and they want to get out. They've tried a handful of times, but that security was too heavy and it kept them from making the jump. So what Amanda realized was, hey, corporate America fired me, or corporate America left me, whatever that was, is a funny way of saying it. So she didn't have that rope. So she stumbled into this made it because she had to. She didn't have that thing weighing her down. You stumbled into being financially free because you had very low expenses. I don't think your plan was, I'm going to be a multimillionaire. You just knew, hey, it would be smarter to not have expenses. So. Yeah. This is really about sharing how those people made it out of that prison so that more people can follow.
Yeah. And one piece of just tangible advice in there, I wrote this in the book, How to Invest in Real Estate, but I'll repeat it here. Our income is oftentimes like this creature. In fact, there's the movie Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. It's the Harry Potter spinoff. In there, there's this creature called the Akami, and this thing will grow to whatever size container you put it in. So they put it in a teacup, it's the size of a teacup. You put it in a bus, it grows to the size of a bus. Our finances are just like that. They grow to whatever size container you put it into. So if you just make 10 grand a month at your job right now, if you're listening to this, you're making 10 grand a month at your job, my guess is you're spending between $9,000 and $10,000 every month. You might have a few hundred dollars a month you set aside for savings. You might have something, but everyone spends to what they make for the most part. And it's very rare to find people who don't do that. But those who do, I find most of the time follow this exact principle I'm going to say here. And that is to find a way to shrink your container. And you won't even notice it. So if all of a sudden your container was only $8,000 a month, you would spend $8,000 a month. You wouldn't be cutting back. You wouldn't notice anything missing. You'd just be spending $8,000 a month instead of 10. And then if you made that container $7,000, you probably wouldn't notice that either. Maybe you got down to like 3, you would notice, or 4 or 5, you know, and maybe it has to happen slowly over time, but find ways to reduce your container. How do you do that? By having money sent from your direct deposit. If you have a job that is direct deposit, have it sent to another account that you don't have easy access to without online banking or whatever. Have it sent to another system, pull more of it out into a Roth IRA, things like that, ways to divert your money so it doesn't land in your account. Now, who's the best at understanding this and forcing us to all do this? The US government. Right? They don't tell you at the end of the year, pay us all the tax money you owe us.
They take it as soon as it comes in.
They take it when it comes in. I've known numerous entrepreneurs, in fact, most of them, who they make a bunch of money throughout the year, whether it's being a real estate agent, whether it's being, whatever they do. And then at the end of the year, they spend all their money. They have no money for taxes because it's really, really, really hard to set that money aside every month. I mean, I've done it. There's been many times I've done it. I've spent the money I've set aside for taxes. And it's like, I got to scramble at the end of the year. So the government knows to take it away. So it's taking the same power, the IRS power, and putting it in your own hands. And so that's just a good way to be able to limit that. So you limit how much you're spending now so you can spend as much as you want later. It's just sacrifice. It's what investing is all about.
Fantastic advice.
Thank you. I'm a fantastic beast. And now you know where to find me. All right. Well, we got to begin wrapping this show up. This has been fun to kind of recap some of our favorite clips and episodes from the year. Of course, there are dozens and dozens of more episodes. We launched over 65 maybe or 70 shows. I think it was 65 shows this year because we did one each week and then we doubled up towards the end of the year. So lots of episodes to go back and listen to. So if you are looking for something to do over this holiday break or in the new year and you want to fire yourself up, go listen to these episodes we just talked about or go find one maybe that you have not listened to. David, what comes to mind for you if I had to pick one of your favorite episodes of the year? I know I'm putting you on the spot here and we're not looking at the whole list, but anything come to mind is like, oh yeah, that was a really cool episode.
Amanda Young's, the one we just heard, was really, really good. Ben Hardy and Dan Sullivan.
Yeah, both those were awesome.
Those were both really, really good.
All right, I'm going to pull this up actually right now because I want to know some of these. I'm kind of just scrolling through here, some of the ones. I mean, there were so many good ones. Greg Gade, like he was my partner out here in Maui. He is awesome and he had a great story. I love that episode. I mean, every one of these is awesome. AJ Osborne was amazing. Rick Jarman was awesome. Yeah. So yeah, Rick Jarman episode number, I'm not even sure what number this is, but it came out on July 29th. He actually passed away just recently. And he was Real Estate Old School on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Amazing guy, amazing dude. But sounds like he got the coronavirus and like hundreds of thousands of other Americans didn't make it, which is terribly sad. So go back and listen to that episode. Maybe that would be a great one to go check out and listen to. And again, everything we talked about today, plus, I mean, there's so many on here. I could like list every one of these, but yeah, well, we'll keep them coming in 2021 as well. So thank you guys for being a part of the Bigger Pockets podcast. If you haven't yet left us a rating and review, we'd appreciate that. And I'm going to let David take us out of here.
All right. Thank you guys. Hope everybody had a great 2020. Let's go crush it in 2021. Bigger Pockets for the win. This is David Green for Brandon, the Fantastic Beast Turner, signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam! Instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.